a big hierarchy of things.
Yeah,
Israel rules.
just on a side note, the Japanese took the decision 2 years ago to start building their own missile defense system. They just knew it would take 10 years. So it's like, yeah, you're about 8 years late. But it was well understood already 2 years ago. And that was not because of U.S. pressure. It was because they understood the U.S. is not reliable. But anyhow, completely different theater. Please, let's continue with what's being hit and what the three phases are. So phase two, then... overwhelming the U.S.
Right.
system.
So the U.S. What happened was the time of preparation for an attack went from being around 45 minutes to down to maybe 5 minutes, because these forward radar stations have been destroyed, right? So the forward eyes are gone. That those radars would actually pick up the launch. So the moment the missile's starting to launch, they're ready to pick it up on the scan. So if it's heading toward Israel or heading toward an American bases further in, you know, they've got 45 minutes to react to it. That's a huge amount of time. Now, there's no radars to pick anything up. The FADs have been destroyed in Saudi Arabia. In other words, they're destroyed in Jordan. There is no pickup. By the time you're seeing them coming in, they're 5 minutes out. Your reaction time is obviously minimal. So a lot of stuff starts to get through. It's a phase two. You're still launching a lot of older stuff. I mean, you're going further distance in, but now you're using it to soak up and overwhelm the anti-aircraft systems. Because not only are you sucking up missiles that are being launched to destroy your older stuff, but when they're launching, the radars are switching on. When the launchers are launching, they're identified where you're at, and any follow-on drones or secondary wave is now targeting those platforms. So now you're also destroying the actual anti-aircraft system infrastructure, not just using up their missiles. So you're doing both and degrading. And once that's effectively done, then you go over to your expensive stuff. That's when you pull the good toys out and start whacking key infrastructure that would normally be defended. And that's what we saw Hezbollah shoot off 200 missiles. That normally they wouldn't do something like that as many because they'd be intercepted. But they did it, and they flew mostly unarmed to their destination. This is where we're at now. And there's nothing the U.S. has that can stop this. There's nothing Israel has. Its systems are overwhelmed. Its munitions are at minimal critical levels. And as far as infrastructure in the Persian Gulf, and we saw those five tankers burning. This is what Iran is doing. And you have somewhere, I don't know where, I couldn't even guess from where, they're getting satellite imagery. Because, you know, Donald Trump, by the way, has ordered all U.S. satellite companies to scrub everything for the last 2 weeks and not give out anything. So at least give it out with a two-week delay. So the American companies are offline, but I don't know where they're getting them. But they seem to be... Apparently, not only does Iran have a couple satellites, but other countries on Iran's site have satellites, hundreds of satellites. I don't know. I didn't expect that. I just thought I don't understand what's happening. This wasn't supposed to be that. I mean, and possibly Russia is proxying the U.S.? How dare they? I mean, only America gets to proxy Russia. It can't go the other direction.
That's coming.
Absolutely. I'm shocked. I'm telling you, I'm shocked. Shocked I am.
And I'm sorry, we should not focus on Donald Trump because it's a decoy. It's like it's a distraction from what's actually happening. But the last video on Twitter that I watched about his press conference before we went online is him saying that no expert could have foreseen that the Iranians would strike the countries that host U.S. military bases. That's came out of the blue. Nobody could expect that. It's the level. I mean, okay, it's a distraction from what's really happening. It's just fantastic that stuff is out there. So we've got all of this cooperation going on. We've got the targeting. We also learn now in the third week that, again, the Iranians were not only able to do this three-tiered attack strategy, but, you know, with the U.S. pounding them, and they were pounded, they were also struck. But nowhere near enough in order to take away the capacity to do so. So the Iranians maintain the capability. And every single day, the Pentagon is actually telling us, Hexet is telling us that all of the war-making capacity of Iran had been destroyed, 95%, 96, 97. And still, these things keep flying. So this tells us a lot about the actual capacity of the Iranians, the Iranian military, doesn't it?
Well, what it tells you is that devious Russia has gone over from washing machines to refrigerators to get right. the working chips and coffee makers and you know everything else. That's how we're feeding Iran and their technology and keeping their drones flying. That's right, because you know Russia was out of missiles and ammunition 3 years ago, 3.5 years ago. That's going to shuttle the mother lane.
Yeah.
Yeah, and shovels, deadly shovels. I mean, it's hypersonic shovels. So that technology has been shared. Iran is now moving into the next generation of hypersonic shovels. God help us all. They have multiple warhead shovels on some of these ballistic missiles, as we've seen over Israel. You know, that's when a whole dozen shovels come flying at you at once. But, and, you know, for anyone, and the latest insult is, to try to undermine the Iranian government is Khamenei is gay. That's the best they can come up with. That literally is now the line they're on because that will cause a revolution.
These people, you look at it, it's kindergarten at its best.
No, but it's really difficult. It's really difficult for us to keep a straight face. And everybody, if you're listening and you don't get the shovel reference, then you're probably a very, very statistically unlikely to be on this channel because you're probably too young. But there's just so much cynicism that we had to endure the last 4 years, and it really seems that, you know, we were talking about this right in earlier episodes with other colleagues, that the West started believing its own lies, and this is the moment when it all comes crashing in. The fact yep. that they did believe their own lies led them not only into the Ukraine proxy war, but now into the Iran war. And it turns out Iran is nothing like it was portrayed. And even the people, like really senior people in serious positions, not just Trump, but below Trump, within the military structures, seem to have believed the lies that they told themselves.
You know, like I said, the three big things that came out of yesterday is from the U.S. is A, no more images from satellites. B, it's all AI. And C, Khamenei's gay. That's it.
Did they actually say that?
C, because he's gay and you have to have a revolution. It's on X. It's on other platforms. Yes, absolutely. This will cause a revolution. We killed all of that and cause a revolution. Let's see, brainstorm quickly. What else have we got? This is the epitome of U.S. intelligence and the PR spin, I guess, at this point in this conflict. This is how ludicrous they're getting. This is you know, there's grasping at straws, and there's grasping at thin air. And this is the level they've gotten. This is the best they can do. Is he's gay?
But if you're that far in, at the beginning of week number three, we're that far into this desperation. Doesn't that mean that we are getting really dangerously close to maybe seeing a first nuke being used?
From the U.S., no. From Israel, maybe. Of course, if Israel, I missed one else. I'm sorry. There was point four. Everybody must come here and help us open the Straits of Hormuz. We're not going to do it ourselves because that's dangerous. So bring your ships and do it. I'm sorry, that was the fourth point. I'll have all that up in my update. So yeah, that was the fourth point. I'm sorry, I cheated everybody 25% of the points. So it's fake, no imaging. He's gay, and it's your duty to open the Straits of Hormuz. That's the takeaway for the last 2 days. It's like, really? This is how far it's all sunk. This is, well, you know, whatever his personal life, I'm pretty sure that's not going to affect the war effort at this point. Nobody else is going to come save your behinds in there. Everybody went, thanks. We'll think about it next year. And Oh, and now, by the way, and part of that threat, plea slash threat was things will get bad for NATO if you don't come do this now.
So, I mean, how, tell me, because you're sitting there, like, how's the Russian media reporting all of this? I mean, they must be having the time of their lives now, right?
Oh, yeah, it is. On the Russian, I don't watch too much television. I don't have time. Actually, I watch almost no television. I don't have physical time, but I read a lot of the stuff that comes out. And yeah, they're having a field day with it. I mean, this is the ludicrousness of all of this is just degradation of all of this is amazing. I mean, it's not that the king doesn't have any clothes on, he doesn't have any skin on. I mean, he's gelded and he doesn't have any skin on. You know, at this point, to make it a little crude, if he cuts and runs now, you may have part of his gonads still attached to him. The longer he stays, the more gilded he becomes, because there is no way to win outside of nuking, and then you go into a whole different era that you don't really want to go into. Possible counter nukes from some of the Muslim states that have nukes. And by the way, that'll be the green flag for every country that can to either put up their own nuclear programs or buy somebody's like Pakistan's or North Korea's nukes. I mean, you're going to talk mass nuclearization of the world at that point. It's not a matter of even closing the gates after the horses have fled the barn. It's closing the gates after the barn's burned down. You're still holding the gate. There's no barn. That's what it would be. And Trump would more likely be walking out in handcuffs out of the White House before it's all over, because his enemies, I mean, they're going to have a field day with him anyways. It's just how badly do you want to go down in history? Or he'd have to go full dictator mode. It's Israel on the other hand. But of course, if Israel does it, you know, Israel has a nuclear power plant. It's not a very big power plant, but it does have a nuclear power plant 100 kilometers south of Jerusalem. The point is the whole country's pretty damn small. If that nuclear power plant gets taken out, or the heating and backup electricity, the cooling and the backup electricity units get taken out, which is easy enough to see with Israel's air defense being basically degraded to almost nothing, you'll have a nuclear meltdown, and that'll still contaminate a very large chunk of a very small country. So you'd still be looking at, a huge area. It's not the majority of the area that's going to be radioactive to at least some degree. Yeah, and since there's not a very wet climate, you know, the big plus of a wet climate is it sooner than later, it washes out to sea.
Yeah.
If in a desert environment, it doesn't wash out to sea. And every time the wind blows, everything that's still radioactive that hasn't half-lifed itself out of existence gets blown right back into the atmosphere. And everybody gets to breathe it and eat it and drink it all over again. So
the best protection that Israel has against that scenario is actually the worldview of the Iranian leadership. And when I talked to Mohammad Marandi, he several times said, "Look, Pascal, this is the land of Palestine. We have no intention of poisoning Palestine." So that's that good for them, but it's extremely dangerous, of course. But maybe let's talk just a little bit about not just what we can foresee, but how you think that the development also coming from Russia and coming from China, what that tells us. So 2 days ago, I had a discussion with a Chinese scholar that is not out yet, but I will put it out to Thursday or Friday this week. And he was making the point that when the war started, the Chinese were very pessimistic. And they always, he said, like in the Chinese view, the Iranians always were too blue-eyed about the US and their ability to negotiate with them and so on and so forth. So they were very pessimistic, and they withheld a lot of some of the support that they could have given because they didn't want to bet on a losing horse. And now that the Iranians are really kind of rocking it, like in their campaigns, that he says the Chinese are becoming much more confident of also like adding more backup and also rhetorically speaking out for Iran more, which they were very hesitant to do in the beginning. Is there a similar thing happening in Russia?
Well, Russia was backing Iran as it was. So does success breed success? Of course it does. You know, the great aid to help the Soviet Union, you know, when it kicked in during the Second World War. It kicked in when the British ambassador drove up out of Moscow, drove up to Klin, which was at that point about 100 something kilometers, 120 kilometers north of Moscow, about 90 now. Moscow's growing. And this is right after New Year's, and toured the death and destruction of a German division up there that had gotten surrounded, had gotten exterminated. And I mean exterminated. And he telegraphed back to Churchill and Roosevelt, I think they're going to win. They're going to do this. And that's when Lend-Lease started coming in from the Americans, which was all paid for. And by the way, the Mongolians, dollar-wise, gave just as much as the Americans. If we're going to go down that road, they actually did. It's slightly different materials, but yeah. But success breeds success. You know, they've got a pretty damn good chance of winning this. Okay, we can back this now. Russia's been backing them as it is. That's why, you know, all the shock and awe and, oh my God, they're giving coordinates. Yeah. You didn't realize that was going to happen. But Russia is still actively also providing equipment, believe you me, that you don't train MiG-29 and Su-35 and S-400 operators and pilots in 3 or 4 months. Those people get trained for a year plus. So you do your own judgment on who's sitting behind the controls and the planes and in the S-400 system, which, by the way, has been husbanded so far. Because Americans, the B-2s have flown in to some degree. But the majority of American Israeli aircraft, including the B-52s, have not flown over Iran. They're still, it's no matter what they say about there is no air defense, there is air defense. You know, there's an S-400 system, at least one, out there somewhere waiting. So if those B-52s come flying in right over Iran, those are easy prime targets. And I'd expect to see a few of them going down. So there's that. But yeah, I think China, and from what I've heard, this may be happening. China is not only seeing that Iran can be can defeat at least locally the U.S., but China is drawing other conclusions from it. So it may be celebrating a reunification before the end of this year. That's something else because Taiwan's got to be getting real nervous about it. The U.S. military has shown itself to be at what level of capability? You know, the Lincoln had to run away. I mean, you could call it what you wanted, but the Lincoln had to run away. The F-35, I was talking with Colonel Wilkerson. He's got a lot of information. Lockheed Martin's prime cash cow, the F-35. First of all, the F-35, for those who don't understand what it is, it's a plane that was supposed to do everything. So it does everything really, really badly. Because, you know,
Can it make coffee?
Nobody can fall out of the sky at very on the spot. I mean, if it runs out of all ammunition, it can bomb things by just falling straight down on them. There are a couple of videos that came out with that. So it may have a coffee maker in there too, for all I know. I mean, the it gets better. Not only are they insanely expensive, Lockheed Martin by contract. On avionics, on propulsion, and certain other subsystems, in the contract has it specified that the U.S. military, and so for the military of every other country that owns them, is not allowed to service those subsystems. Only Lockheed Martin mechanics can service those subsystems. They have $500-$600 an hour. Oh, and so at the service them at sea, obviously they have to be on the aircraft carriers. They're paying, you know, I don't know, how many thousands of dollars a day per person that Lockheed Martin's making and these guys are making for being there. So yeah, that's insane, right? But what's even more insane, first of all, the plane has a maximum bingo distance of about 500 kilometers. Bingo means it has to turn around or runs out of fuel. It can't. So that's half the fuel's gone. 500 kilometers is pretty damn short. I mean, F-18, I think, is around 800 kilometers, 700 some kilometers.
That's about the distance from Tokyo to Osaka. That's not far.
Yeah.
That's only 2 hours, 20 minutes.
Yeah. Now, if it's going, I mean, if it doesn't have to return, it can go 1,000 kilometers from point A to point B before its fuel runs out.
But if you want to go and bomb Iran, then you kind of need to go back.
Yeah. You kind of want to land somewhere other than, you know, inside Iran or somewhere at the outskirts of Iran. So you have to have refueling stratoforces. Basically, the entire American air tanker fuel and a British air tanker fuel, everybody else's, is there. It's almost all concentrated there. So when they get destroyed, that's a hit. That's a pretty big hit. So basically, the U.S. has lost six of them. They're saying that some of these can be repaired, but six of them in 2 days. One got shot down, six got hit by on the ground, or five got hit on the ground. Whether that can be repaired, that's not something that's going to be happening for fire damage, you know, in 1 or 2 days. So they're combat ineffective because the aircraft carrier has to stay far enough away that it doesn't get whacked, which means it's on the other side of the of Oman. The Chinese satellites found them, and they really can't go very far in. Well, it gets better. Yes, how could it get better, Stas? Oh, strap in, it gets better. You know, the M1 Abrams as a tank, our standard rule of thumb was 1 hour exploitation, 2 to 3 hours of maintenance, which is bad, which is already bad. Russian tanks take a lot less maintenance. This thing, if what Colonel Wilkerson told me is correct, they're looking at about 10 closer to 20 hours of maintenance for every hour of exploitation. So basically, you can't fly multiple sorties with these things. You fly out once, you come back, and it's grounded for basically a day as they're trying to fix it. And I mean, talk about inefficient. This has got to be the most inefficient plane that has ever been built, ever. I mean, for its cost, for the cost of maintenance and everything else, it's incredible. I mean, it just...
Just let me get this straight. So not only does the United States not have enough of these things, and they cost a hell of a lot of money, and the production capacity of it depends on the Chinese willingness of exporting rare earths, but they're also like incredibly, they break immediately, and you need to, after 1 hour of flight, you need 2 or 30 hours of maintenance. I mean, this is just a whole new level of like decrepit kind of military system, which I just never thought that the military industrial complex in the US was that poor in quality.
Two corrections. It doesn't necessarily mean they're break, but the whole system has to be reviewed, has to be analyzed, has to be tweaked, and someplace has to be fixed. And it takes about 20 hours to go through everything. So that seems to be what it is. Maybe Colonel Wilkerson heard it wrong, but he's got military sources, obviously. And the man is very well connected, and I'm just passing on the information that he told me. As far as it's not rare earths. It's processed rare earths. U.S. has tons of rare earths. They're not that rare. There's only two of the 17 elements that are actually very, very rare. Now, there are trace elements in crystalline formations that are dominated by other minerals, by other metals, and they can be weeded out in different forms, and it's expensive. It's dirty. And China's got 97% of world capacity. Russia has 1%, and it's doubling its capacity over the next 2 years. And the rest of the world has 2%. So U.S. has, like, one plant that started to do it, and Trump was showing this magnet off. Because in their pure form, they're very highly magnetic. So they're very good for electronics, particularly radar systems. Not really radar. Imaging, X-ray imaging. Some of the elements are radioactive naturally. So they're good for imaging, MRIs, you know, things like that. It all uses them in modern electronics. It's just the U.S. can't mass produce them in quantities that it needs for its missiles, guidance systems, its planes, its big radar balls. So they're that little bit of a problem. It's like saying, you know, the Roman legions are great. We just don't have any steel production. So Carthage has to provide us with steel. Other than that, we'll conquer Carthage and we can keep them down. You got little problems there. This is the same thing on a more modern. And by the way, steel came before iron. Iron's a high-tech process.
Right. People don't understand.
again about the way that this war is developing, like how long do you think the United States can physically still maintain attacking Iran?
Well, they can continue dropping JDAMs on Iran for a long time. U.S. has a lot of dumb iron bombs, manufacturing guidance units, and glide units that are assemblies attached. It's pretty cheap, all things considered. They could do for a very, very long time. Effectiveness, big question. Public support. They never even had a rally around the flag moment that U.S. normally has when it starts these wars. And very quickly, the gas prices are heading toward, they're already, there was at least one station in California that was already at $8, but on average, they're $5 plus, and they're only going up. EU is screaming and hollering, but of course, the U.S. will just ignore it. But since, you know, the U.S. could walk in and on the oil industry and put in for at least inside the U.S., put in export controls and put in price ceilings. They could. But then the donor class would be really, really upset because they're making money off of this. I'm just wondering, you know, the reason there was so much oil in the U.S. because, oh, we've allowed Russia to sell its excess oil. We've allowed nobody to do anything. The reason Russia had excess oil, and everybody else did too, if you look at the oil charts, for about 3-4 months before this started, oil had been going downwards in price. So a lot of companies put a lot of their stock in oil that they didn't sell. They put it on ships, a storage facility, mobile storage facilities, plus, you know, land-based storage facilities, waiting for price to go up. Oh boy, our price has gone up. So my question is, Barron Trump and the rest of these guys, how much did they buy stocks and bonds in the oil industry? Because that's happened before in other industries, and it's not limited to Trump. That's the way the U.S. government works. Insider trading is illegal for everyone except for Congress. Congress wrote itself out of that little bill, by the way. They literally have an exemption, so they know what's coming up, who's going to get the big contracts, and they buy up their stocks and get really rich. That's why Congress is full of millionaires and billionaires, even though most of them came in with upper middle class or lower upper class salaries. And they're making, and they're not making that much money as congressmen. So, you know, but yet they're all millionaires. So Congress is in the loop for that. And I'm sure, you know, who's gonna say if Trump's closest associates were buying up stocks? You know, I'm afraid if plenty of people can say it, they can't prove it. Or if they can prove it, they can't do anything about it. Because there's always, you know, amnesty. They're making money out of it.
Yeah, no, look, war is a racket, and even a losing war is still a racket. So people still making money.
You're absolutely right, Pascal, but it's worse. It's not just a racket. War is not necessarily always a racket. Sometimes it's necessary. But most of the time it is, it at least has a good chunk of it. But the point here, too, is for the U.S. and the military-industrial complex and other companies, they don't care if they win or lose.
Right.
They don't. They're making money either way. So they're not trying to win even. It's just prolong it. Prolong it as long as possible because we're making money. That's the end of it. We'll walk away tomorrow if the money goes away. It's even worse. I mean, people making money while there's a war, but they're trying to win it. At least, you know, at least they're trying to win it. They're trying to get something. When the people back it don't give a damn. Not, you know, 2 decades in Afghanistan, $7 trillion spent in Afghanistan. They didn't care if they won along. It's just they needed to extend it because they're making money off it.
Yeah, and it bears repeating, you know, the United States doesn't lose wars. There's moments when it doesn't win them, but the military-industrial complex still makes a ton of money out of it. No, I mean, the U.S. didn't lose the Vietnam War. South Vietnam lost the Vietnam War. When you're eradicated from the map, that's certainly not going to happen, and they know it, and they're going to continue profiteering on it. Stas, this was again a good update and insights. People who want to follow you, they should go to Mr. Slavic Man, Slavic with a K, on YouTube and on Telegram. Anything else there they should find you at?
Yeah, I've got a Substack, Zmi Garenich, And I'm an ex under Stana Skorpilnik. We couldn't fit the whole name, but we Russians like long names. And unfortunately, I don't give you enough on there. So Stanis Skorpilnik. But yeah, and Zvi Garinich, I'm using that just like you. I'm using that as a backup right now, uploading all my videos. I mean, the videos I'm uploading are older videos, obviously, right now, because I got a big backlog of them. But yeah, you never know what, if YouTube will block you or not. So
everybody find Stas now. Go on Substack, on X, on YouTube. Stas Skorpilnik. Thank you very much for your time today.
Thank you.